So in a Thomas Stoppard play, in the beginning of it, there are these two characters, the protagonists of the story. And in the very beginning of it, they find a coin. And they take this coin and they start flipping the coin. And every time they flip it, it ends up on heads. And over again, they flip the coin and it ends up on heads. And you would just think that maybe, just maybe, the coin just has heads on both sides. But they take the coin and they look and there's tails on one side and there's heads on one side. So they keep flipping the coin over and over again. And very quickly, for someone watching the play, they realize that this is some alternative form of reality. Right? It's an absurd reality that a coin would land on the same place every time. If you take this coin analogy and you think about this conversation that we're going to talk about today, evolution and creation. For the creationist, right, that's the person that doesn't believe in science and doesn't believe that evolution happened. Every time they flip their coin, it ends up on one side, and that's the side of faith. For the naturalist or the scientist who doesn't believe in creation and doesn't believe in faith, they might flip the coin every time, and every time it ends up on tails. Now, we hear that and we say, this is absurd, right? A coin, this doesn't happen. If you flip it over and over again, eventually it will end up on the other side. And I think part of the challenge of the conversation on creation versus evolution is that we look at the side of the coin that we want to look at rather than realizing that there are two sides to the coin, but that it's the same coin. So we're in a sermon series right now on faith and science. And I started it last week and I talked about bodily resurrection. I figured we'd start out easy, right? Talk about bodily resurrection and what faith and science say about that. And today, I'm going to take us to a different conversation, but I want to be very clear. I am not a scientist, right? I am a pastor. So if you come out today and you go, I feel like I wanted more science, I would encourage you, do some research and start to read more, right? Do that work. If you come out today having an opportunity to have dialogue and conversation about people with people about the connection of the two, I think I will have done my job. That's what's really important. So Jennifer Secchi Shields, who's here this morning, which we're so grateful for, I'm glad. She was our poor theology speaker on Tuesday night and did a fantastic job talking about faith and science and the intersections. But I had sat down with her a few weeks ago, and we were talking about this, all these different concepts. And I did this last week, but I want to do it again. She defined two terms for me that were really, really helpful. And those terms are science and scientism. And I want to define them again this morning because I think they set the stage for what we're doing. So when we talked, she said, science is a human endeavor that employs a certain method to try and understand the natural world. So science is this human's way of trying to understand the natural world and what's going on. Scientism, on the other hand, is a philosophy that says science is the only reliable method to know truth and that it's the only truth that matters. And she looked at me and some others at the end of that statement and said, I embrace science, but I categorically reject scientism. To suggest that that's the only answer or the only way to explain stuff. So today we're going to be talking about this conversation that people have been quarreling about for years. Evolution or creation? I remember when I was in 10th grade biology. It was the first time that I had really talked about evolution. Perhaps I was late to the game. Right? 10th grade biology, Mrs. Davis was about this tall. And she was all of about 75 pounds, our biology teacher. And she gets up and she starts talking about evolution. And I remember having like this visceral reaction to it. If you're new, if this is your first time, I grew up in a very conservative evangelical church. So Mrs. Davis went to the Baptist church in town. There was only one Baptist church in town. It was a big Baptist church. And Mrs. Davis went to this church and I could not fathom or understand how a person of faith could get up and teach on evolution. It didn't make any sense to me. I mean, is she just doing it because the county made her? Why would she do such a thing? This is an insane concept. So I go to my friend Trevor, who's in 11th grade at the time, and I said, Trevor, Mrs. Davis goes to your church. What kind of stuff are y'all teaching in your church? And he says, what do you mean? And I said, Mrs. Davis is teaching about evolution, and she's a Christian. And he goes, yeah. And honestly, it was this time for me to just sort of wrestle and get sort of messed up on this idea that possibly, just possibly, and I wasn't there in 10th grade, possibly, just possibly, these things are not in conflict with each other. Evolution and creation, one does not dilute the other. So I want to do some work this morning on helping us possibly get to the idea that maybe they are not two diametrically opposed views of the way that humanity came to be, but to maybe see evolution as a means of God's creation, as a means of the way that God did it. So I want to take us this morning back to the beginning of the Bible, Genesis chapter 1, and I want to start looking at verse 20, and I'll go over a few verses here this morning. It says, "And God said, let the water teem with living creatures. Let birds fly above the earth across the vault of the sky. So God created the great creatures of the sea and every living thing with which the water teems and that moves about in it, according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. God blessed them and said, be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the water in the seas, and let the birds increase on the earth. And there was evening and there was morning, the fifth day. And God said, let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, the livestock, the creatures that move along the ground, and the wild animals, each according to its kind. And it was so. God made the wild animals according to their kinds, the livestock according to their kinds, and all the creatures that move along the ground according to their kinds, and God saw that it was good. Then God said, let us make humankind, mankind, in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So this story seems pretty clear, right? God is creator. God creates. God makes. God designs. God creates humanity. And you hear this story, and perhaps you, like me, read this and you say, well, this is a little challenging. Because science didn't show that just poof, humankind is created. So I want to dive a little bit more deeply this morning into Genesis, into what I think is actually going on, and into science. Science, depending on whether you're talking to a naturalist or a different scientist, science says the earth is about 4.5 billion years old. A creationist, right? Somebody who believes in a seven-day creation that God created literally in six specific days, believe that the earth is about 6,000 years old, because they take the genealogies and they add them all together and they get to the end. But even within science, there's some disagreements, right, about the age of the earth, whether you're a naturalist, right, whether you're a scientist who believes that it just sort of all came from dust, right? So there are these disagreements, and there are these different people, all different types of people. There are creationary evolutionists, right? There are creationists. There are different people that struggle with this conversation and have it in different ways. Before we get into who is right and who is wrong, I want to do a little bit more digging into the creation story. Adam Hamilton, if you've ever read his book, Making Sense of the Bible, does a really good job in his chapter on this. And he says, all right, let's just look at what happens in Genesis chapter 1. Day 1, God created light and darkness. Day 2, God created an atmosphere. Day 3, God created dry land and plant life. Day 4, God created the sun, moon, and stars. On day 5, God created the fish in the sea and the birds of the air. On day 6, God created all other animals. And lastly, human beings. Now, Hamilton in his book says it is possible that when this was written 3,000 years ago, right, it is possible that this was the understanding of science at the time. Right, it's possible that they were writing it to reflect their understanding of the scientific thing. But the challenge is, when you read this, there's some problems with it. I mean, of course, it deals with the fact that light, dark, and atmosphere had to come before humans. Then less things that were less complex were created. More complex things came next. Now, while this aligns, as I said, there are challenges. Genesis teaches us that plants formed, its atmosphere developed, and trees and plants grew before the sun was created. If you're an early elementary child, what's the problem with that? Photosynthesis. Thank you. You were very helpful this morning. Photosynthesis, right? Plants need light to grow. But if plants come before light, how does that happen? So you can read this storyline and go, well, wait a second. Is science wrong? Is photosynthesis not actually a thing? Is the story wrong? Let's dive a little bit deeper. Let's look at Genesis chapter 1 and chapter 2. Chapter 1 gives you this day-by-day account that I just told you as to how things happen. Genesis chapter 2 seems to explain that creation all happened in one day. There's not a seven-day creation story in Genesis chapter 2. Genesis chapter 2, we said that humans come before plants. That's not the way that it happens in Genesis chapter 1. So we have these things that seem to be diametrically opposed to each other. Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 2. What Hamilton says in his book is maybe they're not opposed to each other. Maybe they're trying to tell the story for different purposes. Maybe one is trying to get to the nature of God. Maybe the other is trying to get to the nature of humanity. Perhaps when we look at those two chapters, it's not that one makes the other void. But here's another really important thing. Genesis chapter 1 and chapter 2 are not the creation story. Because if we call them the creation story, that suggests that God stopped creating in Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 2. But rather, God is a God of continual creation. Right? Justo Gonzalez, who's a theologian, says that we cannot look at Genesis 1 and 2 as the creation story. We have to look at Genesis 1 and 2 as the beginning of creation. Not the whole story. It's not the end. And if we look at creation in that way, is it not possible that the God of creation, the God who continues to create, may just maybe have used evolution as a process of creating? Maybe, just maybe. Now, I remember, if Mrs. Davis did not freak me out enough in 10th grade biology, my Hebrew Bible professor did in semester one of Hebrew Bible in seminary. It was day two of our class, and she said, all right, let's take a look at Genesis chapter one. And she starts doing this crazy thing where she pulls out the Hebrew, right? And she says, I want to look at something. She goes, you know that name we've given for man, first man? What's the name we give for first man? Adam. She goes, yeah, that wasn't really a name. She says, Adam, which is a Hebrew word, actually means earth creature. So earth creature that is created, Adam, is translated later as this guy, Adam. And she said, it's not until you hear man and woman specifically mentioned that man even gets any sort of name, and that's Ish and Isha, which means male and female. So she said, part of our issue in understanding the nature of creation and the nature of God is our translation that we have. She said, if we go back to the original Hebrew, we see that this is not an issue of the age-old argument of, did man come first or did woman come first and who's better and how did this happen? Again, Genesis' job was not to explain the how. It's to explain the why. God is a God who created out of love. Humanity needs God. That's a really, really important difference. Genesis 1 is a powerful story laying out the foundational claims of the Bible. And Genesis 2 teaches us the nature of God and the nature of humanity. They're not in conflict with each other. And I don't understand why for years the church has been trying to pit them against each other. I remember on Tuesday evening, somebody at Poor Theology said, I got to tell you, I haven't really struggled with faith and science. They don't seem to be breaking apart and fighting each other. Today on my Facebook page, I shared that we were doing this sermon series and somebody said, I'm so glad a church is actually talking about this because I'm tired of the church pitting us against each other. Faith and science, creation and evolution do not have to be different coins. They can be two sides of the same coin. So evolution, what I found out, I don't know a ton about evolution. Let me tell you that. I found out I don't know a lot. But I also found out that there are a lot of misunderstandings in the conversation on evolution too. There's a lot of misunderstandings of the way things happen. So I decided that to get us all on a similar page as far as evolution this morning, I want to show you a very brief video. Fascinating to me how much bigger it is than I like to think about it, right? That it's not just, so we were apes and now we're humans, right? Evolution is not simply that. But it's also important to realize, and I wanted to put this up so that you see it, as Jennifer said, evolution is simply the best biological, mechanistic explanation for the diversity of life on this planet. It's the best explanation scientifically that we have. Now again, when I was talking about the body last week, I also said that there's a mix of God's power in there, right? So it's maybe greater than our own understanding. But on Tuesday night, I found it fascinating at Poor Theology when she talked about the interesting thing that was specific to humanity. She said it's our nature of caring and sharing. For years and years and years, humans have been sitting around campfires, right? Caring and sharing, telling the stories, caring for one another. And the coolest thing that I thought was, she talked about how amazing it was that we have grocery stores. Think about this for a second. She said, we go in grocery stores and we pick out groceries and we take them home, not just for ourselves, but for our families and for others as well. It is amazing that we don't go in a grocery store and just start ripping through packages and eating things, right? Our nature is to go and take the things and bring them home. Right? There's a very specific way that we were created. There's a very specific purpose and a very specific goal. So my biggest thing that I wanted to walk away from today is that evolution and faith are not in conflict. If I can begin to see God as a God of continual creation, because who wants to be the person in this room that looks at God and says, oh, you were done at Genesis 2, right? Who wants to do that? But to look at God as a God of continual creation, continuing to perfect the masterpiece, continuing to use the gifts that God has to do that, I think that we can become people who see the same coin having two sides. I don't think we have to become people who see these two things as diametrically opposed to one another. See, for me, friends, it's really not terribly important how God created. For some it is. For me, it's not. For me, it's terribly important that God created. Why God created. To share God's love. To share that and to show the beautiful masterpiece that God can do. You know, one of the things about the church that happens, often the church tries to be quick in coming up with explanations for things before maybe science has gotten to them. I mean, what happens when the church says that the earth is flat? That happened, by the way. Right? What happens when the church says that the earth is the center of the universe, that living things were separately created? Is that eventually those who study and come to learn new things have to wrestle with that. What do I do if the church says this and I learned this? My goal today is not to clear all of this up for us. My goal today is that we can have dialogue with people about the intersection of faith and science. That we don't have to go, oh, as Tim did, Mrs. Davis, you're wrong. But instead have dialogue about how the two can live in beautiful relationship together. It seems to me that our work as the church gets harder and harder when we look at people and tell them they're wrong and we're right. The church has been doing that for a long time, friends. Instead, what if we dialogue with one another, get to know one another, share in stories, and listen to other people? So this has not been an expansive conversation on evolution. I'm not going to give you that. I'm not the person to do it. What I'm hoping is to give us language to have conversation about our faith. The Bible is not about the what happened or the how. The Bible's about the why and about the nature of the loving God who's the main character in the story. Don't, friends, don't use it as a tool to rule out everything else in your life just because you don't understand the greater picture. John Wesley, the founder of United Methodist Church, was really, really big on seeing the greater picture. I invite us into that as well. I pray that we are people who share in dialogue and conversation with people about the fullness of the nature with God. Part of my life, part of my faith, is growing to understand more and more the fullness of the nature of God, and I hope that's for you too.